Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, January 8th, 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. We're letting Dave and John take the day off from CES coverage live from the show floor. And we're taking it over here where we are far more comfortable and our feet are far less tired. So with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, it's been a while. Good to be here.
It has. Also with me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hello, Kelly. It's very good to be here today. Thank you for having us.
I have no idea how to respond to that. Okay.
I'm a little sick, so my voice may be sounding a little bit hoarser or something. Okay, I'm sorry. All right. I'm here. Kelly, thanks for having us. One of Brian's voices.
Okay. Morning Zoo Brian. This one I know. Yes, okay. Exactly. We can do this. All right. It's okay, Andrew. We'll get through it together. One of the things I actually wanted to talk about was CES adjacent, because there are things announced at CES that we thought were interesting that we haven't seen a lot from Dave and John about. And Andrew, one of those was something that you have your eye on that I thought was particularly timely this year.
Yeah, so when Apple introduced iOS 13, they also added support for gaming controllers. Mm-hmm. And at CES, Razer announced their own gaming controller. It's called Kishi. And it's cool because it's like two separate controllers. One of them plugs into your Lightning port on the iPhone. The other one just snaps on the other end. And, you know, the whole thing together kind of looks like a Nintendo Switch. It's like a long horizontal form factor.
It sounds really cool.
Yeah. So there's a Lightning port model. There's a USB-C port model for Android phones. I don't think this would work with USB-C iPads. They say, I mean, because it has a hardware connection, it's low latency. So you shouldn't really experience too much lag when you're playing a game. Now, what I think would make this product better was it looks like you can hook these controllers together, maybe for storage. But I wish that in that mode, it would have Bluetooth so I could use it with my iPad, but it doesn't sound like I can. But they say it'll be available sometime earlier this year, so we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Brian. Not getting Bluetooth when they're hooked together is fascism.
It's complete fascism.
It's
complete
total fascism,
especially when you want it.
Exactly. Clearly, that means this controller will be a failure if there's no Bluetooth capability. It sounded interesting to me because there were a couple of attempts made at sort of iOS controllers, whether that was so you could play games on your phone or on your iPad or on Apple TV. And it seemed like it never really went anywhere. And now that we have Apple Arcade, I feel that's why this to me is a very timely announcement. Now that we've got Apple Arcade and there's lots of stuff on there that would be really great to play with an external controller, now we've got what looks like a pretty good external controller.
Mm-hmm. So. I have a lawn related issue here, though.
Yes.
Yeah, I've never been good with a controller. So, like, I get why you want them. I totally get why you want them. I've just never been able to care about it because I'm terrible with controllers. Like, there's never been a controller that likes me. Never.
And I get that. The only reason I'm interested in the controllers is because I have never had the biggest phone. When there was an option of a bigger phone, I never had the bigger phone. And getting all of that controller space out of my game area seems like a good idea to me. That's all.
Yeah, no, I get it.
So I think I'm with you in that I wholeheartedly support the idea. I'm probably not going to buy one of these, but I do see the value in it, and I think it'll be interesting to find out if people are going to start doing this. Because also Catalina added, was it support for PlayStation controllers? Andrew, do you remember?
Well, I know that iOS supports PlayStation controllers, but I thought it was like just any general Bluetooth controller. So maybe Catalina supports it as well.
Yeah, I want to say that that because one of the consoles has Bluetooth controllers, And I want to say it was PlayStation, and I could be wrong about that. It's entirely possible. I look forward to your letters, observations at MacObserver.com, because I do want to get this right. That, like, PlayStation controllers are Bluetooth controllers, and Catalina has Bluetooth controller support, so you can use your PlayStation controllers on your Mac. Something like that. I don't remember what the details of it were, but I remember a bunch of people being really excited that they could use these controllers with their computer without a bunch of gyration, which is what you used to have to do. So... I am very interested in where the game controller space is going to go now that Apple Arcade has made some of these, some games that would really benefit from having an external controller possible. So that sounds, that's definitely a thing I'm interested in seeing, if for no other reason than just, like, is this going to be the next wave of stuff that we get, you know, as stuff that you plug into your phone to do different things with. So I think it'll be interesting to watch. I hope that this is one, like you said, that actually ships this year, and that this isn't more, CES stands for Coming Expected Spring. So I'm hoping that's...
Well, hold on, though. There's a reason for that.
For what?
For CES's timetable. You know, CES's was designed first and foremost for the retail industry.
Yes.
So the things that are being introduced now in the beginning of January are largely... and this definitely isn't as much the case as it was certainly before Macworld quit, but it's stuff that's really designed for next Christmas season, mm-hmm. for almost a year from now, because that used to be the ramp up time required for manufacturing in particular.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not that CES is like full of vaporware or anything. Mm-hmm. Well, There are parts of it that are full, especially some of the low budget, some of the low budget space dedicated to quote unquote startups. Mm-hmm. But anyway, there's a reason why a lot of this stuff isn't shipping yet. It's just, I mean, how the show is designed.
Yes, but it used to be, well, first of all, it didn't used to get this much coverage from anybody, and second of all, there's a lot of stuff that they show that's sort of like when you go to an auto show. Like, we have no intention of shipping this, it's a concept car. Like, there's a whole lot of concept car kind of stuff that happens at CES, and I get that too, but when it's something like this that's very specific and people want to see it, I hope it's a thing that actually ships. Not all of them do, and this is one that I want to see become reality. So that actually leads into my pick for interesting thing that came out of CES this year. And that is a thing that was announced at CES last year. And it sounds like it's actually going to ship this year. They've decided it will come out in April. And that's Aura, A-U-R-A. And they want to ship a particular Apple Watch band that will make it possible to test your body composition. And so it can test for and how much water, like how hydrated you are, that kind of thing. So it's just an additional sensor. It looks like it's attached to an Apple sports strap, the Velcro one. And it'll be $99. They say it's going to come out in April of this year. And I'm curious about this because I haven't seen a lot of attachments for the Apple Watch. I haven't seen anybody do anything interesting with the band itself that continues down that wearable exercise monitor sort of thing. Like, we've seen people sort of try batteries and things like that, but I haven't seen anything that looks like it works really well in conjunction with the stuff the watch can already do. And I want to see if this augments that the way I had sort of assumed we would get things by now that would do this. So I'm curious if that's going to happen.
I don't think I've heard, I'm in the same boat. I don't think I've heard of many strap accessories like that can actually do things like this. Mm-hmm. So, but what it does sounds cool. So I'm interested to see how it turns out.
Yes. I think the band is in a few colors. Like, Andrew, you'd written this up and it was a thing that caught my eye as part of the CES coverage we have over at our site. And I definitely want to see if this is how this is going to work, because I want to know if this is a thing that's going to be possible for other companies to create things to go with that, I think it'll be... I think that's the next thing that we're going to get, because we started getting a wave of interesting stuff that you hook to your phone. Like, we talked about game controllers, and there's other things that you can hook together. And I want to know when we're going to get watch accessories, and maybe that time is now. I hope so. Brian, you said not a lot has stood out to you from CES coverage, right?
Yeah, that's not quite the way I would put it. I haven't actually spent a lot of time delving into some of the CES products other than what Dave and John have been covering. And it's so that's a better way of putting it.
Okay.
Thanks for exposing me, Kelly.
Well, I haven't spent a ton of time either, but I went by the watch band and went, ooh, that seems like a cool thing. I definitely want to know more, and I hope it's real. And it's This one is actually funny because it's from last year's CES, and this year it's finally going to come out. So, yeah, you were talking about ramp-up time, Brian. There it is.
Right.
So, speaking of CES and Dave and John being there, I would like to thank our sponsor today for our CES coverage, and our sponsor today is Text Expander. Now, there's an excellent chance at some point you have heard me talk about Text Expander because I talk about it a lot. What it does for you is it manages all of the things that you type repetitively. So every time you have to enter your email address into a form, every time you have to add your phone number or your address or a text message or an email that you send all the time, you can feed that stuff to Text Expander, set it up once, have it be 100% correct, and then give it a small abbreviation and save yourself a ton of keystrokes every day. And you know that information is accurate because you set it up once correctly in Text Expander, and now everything's done. It works everywhere that you type. It works in word processors. It works in your email. It works in text messaging apps. It works in online forms. You can customize those snippets with a fill-in field. So if you send the same thing with a different name to different people, you know, on different days, you can set that up. You can have lists that pop up and choose from a few different options. And one of the features of their latest iteration is Text Expander for Teams. And you can use that to manage snippets across your organization, whether it's a company or a group of volunteers or just a bunch of people who all have to send messages out. You can use Text Expander for Teams for that. You can easily insert those text snippets into any application from the library of content that you create. It's really, really great. And you can go to textexpander.com/TDO, and you can find out more. And we would like to thank them very, very much for their their sponsorship of our coverage of CES. Now, the other thing we want to talk about is something that used to happen right next to CES, occasionally overlapping with CES. You've probably heard Brian and I talk about it on the show before, and that is Macworld, because 20 years ago this week, we got our first look at Aqua. And Brian, I know you've obviously spent loads and loads of time covering Macworld throughout the years. Do you remember this one? I don't remember actually getting to be there. I remember seeing the video afterward.
I do. It's lickable. that's what Steve told us. And it was, I don't think I was, I was not at this one. I was not at this one, but I do remember, I think Dave was at this one for us, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
And it was really interesting at the time. It was, I think when we look back at Aqua, you mentioned this pre-show, Kelly. It certainly looks dated today, but at the time, it was this huge, just different thing. And there were people, you know, there was a little bit of gut reaction, you know, like with a lot of things that Apple does, there was an immediate knee jerk of, you know, in this particular case, I think it was cartoony, maybe is what I recall people saying, but that did not last long. And it very quickly became very popular.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, it was exciting. It was this, you know, this like here's Apple, you know, they're sort of taking macOS into, you know, into the future, this OS 10 thing. Maybe it'll be okay to embrace this scary new Unix operating system that Apple's doing, because, you know, this interface looks so good, and at the same time it borrowed all this stuff from the Mac. I mean, it's like they carried forward legacy concepts that made it comfortable, while at the same time adopting most of the awesome things that were part of NextOS, mm-hmm. all with this updated, what at the time felt like a very modern look and feel.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me, remembering seeing it at the time. Like I said, I don't think I watched it live, but I remember seeing it and a lot of coverage when it came out at Macworld 2000.
These things.
Which used to be like the first week of January, first, second week of January every year. So very, very early in the year, we would see, you know, what...
Macworld Expo and CES for a few years traded off as to who would be first.
Yeah.
And they were both... I mean, Macworld Expo was a pretty big deal, especially once Steve Jobs came back and Apple was making new announcements there. It was a pretty big deal, but there was mm-hmm. definitely competition between Macworld Expo and CES to see who could be first. And then after a while, it kind of settled into CES being the first show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing that I remember about it is that Aqua was like nothing we'd ever seen from a computer before. Like what it looked like with the 3D-ness of everything.
The colorfulness.
You know, and how bright it was. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very bright. It was very bright.
It really, really was. Particularly because when I came up, it was like I started using computers before the monitors were in color. Like they would be one color. Like it'd be all green or it'd be all, you know, grayscale. So to remember that at one point I spent time on a Mac that was just shades of gray, and then to see this and have it be so different and have it be have the defaults to be so colorful. Like we had, we had colorful windows and you could have the desktop picture be what you wanted it to be. And the highlight color was a different thing if you customize it. But none of it was quite this bright, and it had all of the 3D-ness. And the way the windows operated was fundamentally different and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, they want to build it on Unix now, which seems really weird. And there was like so much of it.
No extensions.
Yeah, there was so much of it that was just a change in the operating system on an atomic level.
Yeah, but Steve, man, he got that, he cranked up that reality distortion field.
Yeah,
you know, and calling it lickable was, I mean, that wasn't something that happened in the computer space.
No.
Things weren't supposed to be lickable. You know, things were supposed to be staid, and things were supposed to be, you know, professional and
beige.
You know, to show that you're like getting work done, and
yes.
You know, and this is a serious computer, and you could probably like you know, throw it in your pickup truck or something. I'm kidding there, but I mean, you know, Steve doing that was it was, you know, part and parcel to changing how Apple was competing. I think it's really easy to lose sight of this, but when Steve came back to Apple, computer competition was entirely about price and performance.
Yes.
The twin devils of price and performance. And while performance was ratcheting up, price was ratcheting down, and Dell was, you know, in this race to the bottom to see, you know, just how crappily they could make computers and have them still work. and you know, like all of Dell's R&D was going into like how to make a computer with one less screw. That was my long running sort of euphemism for the entire industry.
Yes.
And then Steve comes back and with the iMac and we've talked about the iMac too, but I think that we forget about the lickableness of Aqua playing a role in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then almost overnight, Steve Jobs and his, you know, team, his this brand new team that he brought from mostly from Next, plus this guy he hired out of HP, this Tim Cook fella. And
oh, yeah, they, whatever they, happened to him?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows? They overnight transformed the competitive space to be one of experience, while mm-hmm. the rest of the PC industry is still competing on price and performance. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the greatest business achievements of all time. And I don't think that that we've reached a point yet where Steve gets anywhere near enough credit for that transformation, because that's what allowed Apple to survive. That's what allowed Apple to survive to introduce the iPod, mm-hmm. and, you know, and to introduce iTunes and to you know, eventually do this, you know, it's, do you get it yet?
Yeah.
Three devices in one. I mean, you
Are
know,
you getting it's, it? Yeah.
If Apple had been forced to continue competing on price and performance, the company would have gone under.
Yeah.
And to be able to change that is just astounding. Mm-hmm.
And what I remember about it was happily handing Apple $30 to get the public beta later that year, after he announced that announced OS X and Aqua and this new user interface. And later, I want to say it was like August or September, the public beta was released, and you had to go pay $30 for it. And I did. And I remember standing in line here
happily
and waiting for it, because good Lord, I needed that on my computer.
Immediately.
And you know, the things I remember about it are some of the really small stuff. Like the public beta had no Apple menu, which was terrifying. there were no extensions.
Like
you mentioned.
Boy, did we squawk.
We did. It was only the public beta, because that's the first time I remember hearing when they officially announced the first version of OS X that was officially released, that was not a beta. I remember them saying, "We brought back the Apple menu. We heard you." There were pinstripes, which I remember being part of Aqua. The little computer icon at the top of your window was your computer. So if you had an iMac, it would be a little iMac. And if you had a tower, it would be a little tower. And if you had a laptop, it would be a little laptop. It was the cutest thing. And the home icon was a little house. And then like the favorites thing was like this bright red 3D heart. And the apps thing was, you know, sort of like what the App Store logo looks like. And I remember it being very unlike anything we'd ever had a chance to get our hands on before, and how different it was. And it was great. And there, to be fair, yes, it's been 20 years and there are still things I miss about OS 9, because pop-up windows were the greatest thing, and I'm sad I don't have them anymore. I know. It's fine. I've let it go, but it's a thing that still bothers me a little bit. I mean, clearly. I've made my peace with the fact that they're never coming back. I have.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I don't still miss them. But I know I'm never getting them, and I have given up that campaign. It's okay, Brian.
Clearly.
But it's so funny how at the time that was such a modern thing to see, and such an unbelievable thing to see. Like, nobody'd seen an operating system that looked like that and functioned like that and looked like a thing where you sort of had some idea what you were looking at when you were looking at it. Because like you said, you know, Brian, everything was beige, and, you know, beige meant business. And none of that was part of this operating system. And it was great. And then you look at it now and people are like I've seen people not believe that that's what OS X looked like at any point, you know? So I think it's fascinating. Andrew doesn't remember because he was in kindergarten or something. So that's why we haven't heard much from him at this point.
Yeah, I wasn't covering Apple in 2000, but I did enjoy watching this keynote because I realized, wait, this looks familiar, because they use the same or similar user interface in iOS, because, you know, before iOS 7, when everything went flat, they used the same glossy app icons and scroll bars and, you know, checkboxes and all that sort of thing. And it all started with Aqua. So it was like, this is cool.
Yeah. It's kind of nice to see your phone's parents, you know, there on stage.
Yeah.
So
as long as they don't start kissing.
Don't tell them how we make iPhones, Andrew. I hadn't realized it had been 20 years. It's one of those things that feels like it was not that long ago at all, but also really, really long ago. You know, when you look at the screenshots and, you know, if you go look at OS X public beta images, like if you look at it now, you can sort of, like if you squint, you can sort of see whatever version of macOS you're using currently, you know, comes from that. The line, you know, but it's kind of hard to see unless you're, you know, unless you're squinting at it a little bit.
There are certainly people who complain that not enough has changed.
Yeah.
And there's certainly an argument to be made for that. That we've had look and feel stuff change, but the, you know, the basic principles haven't budged.
They've not. Which is a debate we will have to have another day. We are going to go ahead and wrap it up here, but man, 20 years. Okay, so I have to go. There's some kids on my lawn, so we have to wrap this up.
Yep, get them away.
One of them is Andrew.
They can mess things up.
I know.
They can mess things up. They could like wreck. They can wreck it.
Get exactly. Them off. So yeah, I definitely need to get a status update about those darn kids. They're on the lawn right now. Brian probably has to do the same thing. It's been like an hour since he checked, so we all need status reports on our lawns, and Andrew needs to get off one of them. I'm not sure which.
Yeah.
But we'll figure it out. So anyway, Andrew, thank you so much for being here today.
Yep, thanks for having me.
And Brian, thank you for joining me for this walk down memory lane.
Yep, thanks for having us. Good times.
And I am your host, Kelly Gamont. You can look forward to more CES coverage on our site. And in the meantime, I will probably talk to you tomorrow. Be excellent to each other.